Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It's my pleasure to welcome back Sean Eisenhower to the podcast. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks, James. Looking forward to it.
Well, Sean, you know, you've been a past guest. You've been on many episodes. And for those that may have not caught you on those episodes or may not be familiar with you, you're one of the founding partners of Iridicio. You know, you present at conferences all over the place. You're co-authored a few books. And you've been in maintenance and reliability for quite a while. Although super brief, what else can you tell us about yourself?
Well, I think that really covers it, James. I enjoy what we do. I enjoy reliability. I enjoy education, and that's a big piece of why I stay in it and why I've been in the reliability game now for about 20 years.
All right, excellent. Now, what we wanted to talk to you about today was root cause analysis. And root cause analysis is one of those topics you hear a lot about. You hear a lot of different opinions. And we actually had a listener ask this question. They want to know what the pros and cons of each RCA methods are.
Well, very good. Well, we'll talk a little bit about them. One of the things that I think is interesting for the listeners to know is there are about 100 plus, I've found and seen lists that contain over 100 different ways to do RCA, different tools, different techniques that you can use. I know today here we're going to talk about a few of those, but just be aware. I mean, there are lots of tools out there for different scenarios, and they all have their place.
All right, excellent. Now, we have lots of tools similar to our toolbox. We got to pick the right one because if all we have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But before we
That's exactly right.
But before we dive into that, what is root cause analysis? Let's make sure everyone's on the same page about that before we dive into these different types of methods and tools.
Absolutely. So root cause analysis is really just a problem solving methodology, meaning that we are taking a problem, we're dissecting it into its contributing factors or its causes or the circumstances, depending on the types of tools we're using, and understanding better how we can address not just the very intermediate situation, but also the factors that cause that situation to occur.
All right, excellent. So we're trying to understand those actions and conditions and situations and circumstances that led to an event and understand which ones we need to eliminate to reduce the risk of that event occurring again.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. One of the ways I say it, it's exactly what you said with just a little tweak. I say that root cause is really about reducing the risk to an acceptable level for the money you're willing to spend. And at the end of the day, I believe that's what it is. Some people try to call it problem elimination or something like that, but it's not really problem elimination. Many times, as you better understand the problem, you realize that it may be too expensive to quote-unquote eliminate it, but you can reduce or mitigate the risk of it reoccurring to a level that you believe is acceptable within the context of the issue or the process that you're dealing with.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Now, what are the different types of RCA methods out there? I know there's a lot of methods that share commonality across different tools, but what are the main ones you see out there?
There are a ton. There really are. We tend to talk about 10 tools, and we divide those 10 tools into really four areas. For us, there's some tools that we use for pre-analysis. Think of those kind of as the tools you would use before you interview anyone or before you get a group together to make sure you know what questions you want to ask, how you're going to get people engaged, and providing the good information that you need to get to the root of the problems. So we call those the pre-analysis tools. The second set that we talk about on a regular basis are the time tools, and these are tools that are centered around sequence or timing, and they allow us to see interactions that can be very hard to see any other way. The third set of tools that we talk about is a set of tools we call the tree tools. These include things like Five Whys and also branching down into fault trees and logic trees. And we'll talk more later about why we use those and where, but those are some tools that we believe are very important from a problem solving standpoint. And then the last set of tools that we refer to are the transparency tools. And these are tools for those big problems. These are tools for situational issues, overarching performance gaps, all of those kind of topics. And we'll talk a little more about those later today as well. But this, again, is only 10 tools. And as I mentioned earlier, there are over 100 that I know of. There are a lot of tools out there. Many of them are very specific to one or two problems or one type of problem. These tools that we're going to talk about are more overarching and can be used in a lot of different situations.
All right, excellent. I've seen, you know, versions of fault trees that instead of coming up and down, they run side to side. Same type of approach though, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, we see, you know, what we see in the industry is a lot of folks taking the tools and making them theirs. So, one person might build a fault tree from top to bottom. Another might build it right to left or left to right. In essence, the driving force, the what you're seeing, what you're able to detect and understand with those tools is very similar. It's just more so a matter of getting it the way they like it and so that it really provides the value they're looking for.
All right. Excellent. Now, let's start with the tree tools. All right. Let's start with those and let's talk about why do we want to use tree tools? Where do we use tree tools? And, you know, what are some of the shortfalls of those?
All right, good. So tree tools are probably some of the most common tools that we see. I think most facilities, if I say the words 5Y, immediately it conjures up an image to them of what that is. And that's really where we start with the tree tools. And I'm going to give you just a brief look at the three tools, and then we're going to talk about some of the pros and cons. So the first tool is 5Ys. Five whys is simply asking why five times, building a causal chain, if you will, or a link of things that go together contributing to that top issue that we're investigating. If we take that 5Y, though, and we branch it out, by branching it out, we're adding more than one causal chain. So now instead of just having the 5 going down the page, now we've got multiple chains that you can follow. That becomes, as I said, a fault tree. And a fault tree is a great tool for understanding the contributing factors. So with the 5Y, you're looking at one factor that caused it to happen. And with the fault tree, you're looking at more of the different contributing factors coming together to create the step above. The last one of these three tools that we'll talk about today is just taking that fault tree and adding in ands and ors at all the branches. So if you put an and an or at every branch, what you're in essence doing is giving yourself the ability to see where things are coming together to give you the problem above and where things are not coming together and either one of them could cause the problem above. And this does become very important, especially in a root cause investigation where maybe the evidence was destroyed or the evidence was lost. And therefore, there are lots of questions as to what actually happened. And I always think about a bearing. You know, if the bearing failed, but by the time we got to it, it was a puddle of molten metal there on the floor because we ran it all the way till it locked up. In that situation, we don't know if it was over-lubricated, under-lubricated, if it was dirty, if the seals were bad, if it had water issues, if it had been lubricated with the wrong lube. All of those potential contributing factors, unfortunately, that evidence has been destroyed, so we're going to have that or statement, and we're going to have to really work at it from multiple angles and try to dig a little deeper for the data. So, again, just to kind of recap, the 5Ys branches into the fault tree, adding ands and ors to the fault tree makes it a logic tree. And I believe that you can use whatever tool in this chain really fits the problem you're working with. If you're doing a very simple troubleshooting situation on the shop floor, Five Wise may be the right tool for you. But if you've got a reliability issue where a gearbox has failed and caused, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours of downtime, then I think you probably want to step up at least to the fault tree and maybe all the way to the logic tree, depending on the amount of evidence is available and the numbers of contributing factors.
All right, excellent. So fault tree gives us a wide range of options. To work through all those things you said, some of those unknowns, understand what could have potentially contributed, those types of things, where are we best suited to use the fault tree or the tree tools?
The tree tools in general, yeah. I would say that the tree tools best fit where you have one specific problem. And I'm going to talk about that from a couple of angles. So one example would be just the one I gave a second ago. If you have a gearbox that failed or a motor that failed or a hydraulic cylinder that failed, that may be a really good opportunity to use the fault tree and understand those contributing factors and how they came together to cause the issue to occur. So that's definitely the easy answer. But I will tell you that we use the fault trees as well with some of the other tools. So when we talk about the time tools here in a few minutes, in the time tool section, many times we will actually build a fault tree off of one of the forcing functions or contributing factors. And we'll get into that here in just a bit. So you can use these fault trees specifically where you have a piece of equipment that has failed and you really want to understand why it failed and what all contributed to that happening, or you can use it to support some of the other tools.
All right, excellent. Now, where do the tree tools fall short? You mentioned that, you know, we're using it for a very specific problem. Can we use these for large problems, complex problems?
So that's a great question. There are really two ways that the tree tools fall short that I see, and that's really the reason we talk about the other two types of tools that we use on a regular basis. So the first reason is exactly what you said. If the problem is very large or has very broad amounts of forcing functions or forcing issues that are coming in, it can be a little unwieldy. In fact, most of the time the tree is too broad for the whiteboard you're working on, ends up starting to take over a wall instead of a whiteboard. And it can become a little inefficient. It has its pros and cons. Being very visual is a pro, but just the complexity of trying to map all that out can be a con. And I always like to give an example. So an example of a problem where the fault tree would be maybe not the best solution would be if someone came to you and said, hey, you know, the reliability for this area of the plant is dropping and I want to better understand why. That's going to be a very broad fault tree or logic tree in most cases. If someone comes to you and says, hey, the OEE is dropping, overall equipment effectiveness is dropping in an area, again, that's going to be one of those where there are so many things that could be contributing to that OEE dropping that, you know, if you're just trying to do it with a fault tree, you're probably going to overrun the sides of your whiteboard. Now, the second little shortfall or little issue with these is they don't allow you to see things like risk. They don't allow you to see potential probability, if you will, of the contributing factor in the grand scheme of things. So if you're mapping out all of the potential causes for a bearing failing in your facility, as an example, they're really are some of those that are very likely to have occurred, and there are some that are very unlikely to have occurred. And so as you're going through that process, you don't have a real good way of evaluating the risk associated. There are some tools out there that combine risk priority number and fault trees. I have seen them on multiple occasions, but in general, the tool just doesn't allow us to see that portion of the equation. So that's why we switch over to some of the transparency tools.
All right. Excellent. So let's talk about the transparency tools then. What are these transparency tools and where do we use them and why wouldn't we want to use them?
So the transparency tools is a set of three tools for us. The first tool is your fishbone. And the fishbone is a way of just kind of understanding contributing factors or contributing causes. I don't believe in most cases fishbones actually deliver root causes. I believe that they deliver potential higher level causes in most cases. But with that said, you take that fishbone and you pour that into an Excel spreadsheet, and you've got the beginnings of what we call an FMEA, or a failure modes effects analysis. That's the second tool in this section. And then the third tool, if we take that FMEA and we add in something called risk priority number, which I mentioned a few minutes ago, when you add in that risk priority number, what you're going to end up with at that point is a FMEA, a failure modes, effects, and criticality analysis. That's the premier tool in this category. It's a tool that allows you to really understand all of the contributing factors and all the ways that something could fail to meet your expectations. But on the flip side, it also allows you to calculate risk priority number and sort those from the highest risk to the lowest risk. And that can be really important when you're talking about attacking something like OEE is dropping in the area, or reliability is dropping in the area. You really want to know, okay, yes, I've got 350 potential causes here, but which ones are the most likely? Because at the end of the day, that's probably where I'm going to start to develop solutions to improve the reliability of that area.
During these uncertain times, Iridicio is here to provide support. We have set up a special page for you to access exclusive resources such as webinars, templates, and office hours where you can ask our staff any questions that you may have. We are focusing these practical resources to help maintenance and reliability practitioners that are working from home or can carve out a little bit of time during this COVID crisis to pick a project and implement best practices. Find out more at help.iridicio.com.
Now, I'm going to ask the question that many people are probably thinking. I thought FMEAs were for developing stuff proactively, not problem solving.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a great question. So I use FMEAs both proactively and reactively. If you think about it, an FMEA is an incredibly versatile tool that unfortunately all of us really hate using. And I shouldn't say that. I know there are a few of you out there that really like doing FMEAs. My email address is Sean or S. Eisenhower at iridicio.com. I'd love to talk to you. But there's not a ton of folks that really enjoy the tool, so I don't think a lot of them explore the ways that it can be used. But in reality, it's a very, very good tool, both proactively in solving or understanding equipment failures before you install new equipment. It can be used proactively to look at an initiative. You know, for instance, if you're looking to roll out root cause analysis within your facility, that's your function. So what could be the failure modes? What could get in the way of you being able to implement RCAs within your facility? And then the next part of that is, you know, you can look at the risk of those using severity, occurrence, and detection, and then begin to address the things that are the highest risk. So those are very proactive ways to use it, but we can turn that right around and take that same tool and begin to break down reactive failures. So where we've had equipment that has given up the ghost on us, or processes that are not delivering the expected throughput, we can look at all of the different contributing factors and use that risk priority ranking to better understand possibly the big areas that we should go after. Now, you know, anytime you're using risk priority number, or you're using any kind of a percentage look at what might have happened, there's a relatively good chance that, you know, you got hit by one of the lower risk items, and you just have to be aware of that as you go through the process.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. So we can use them both proactively, reactively. It's a versatile tool for these larger problems with many, many variables. And allows us to risk rank them if we're going to the FMECA, because then we can identify the probability, severity, and detectability of each one and figure out which ones we want to focus on.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, a lot of times in those bigger situations, again, it goes back to what we opened up with earlier. At the end of the day, I can't fix every single forcing function or every single failure mode that I identify. So if I can sort them from a most likely perspective or a highest risk, I like that better, a higher risk perspective, then I can make a business case for addressing a certain level of those, and I can determine on, you know, on based on the situation what that level is.
All right, excellent. And then we have another set of tools, the time tools. So what are these? And I want to get, once again, where do we use these? What's the advantages or disadvantages to them?
Great. So the time tools, they're a set of tools that I'll be honest, early on in my career, I neglected them a little bit. But due to some rather large investigations that I was involved with over the years, I've started to realize, or I have realized at this point, that they're probably some of the most powerful tools for helping a group of problem solvers to understand the situation that they're facing. All right. And let me take you through the tools first, and then we'll talk about the pros and cons again. So the time tools, we have two in this section. We start with just a sequence of events. It is just simply taking all of the activities and conditions that were met and setting them up in time sequence in a line. Many times we'll do this with post-it notes, and we'll start, you know, figuring out all the different things that happen, and then we'll begin to take them and place them on the board in the order that they occurred. Now, the second step of that is to identify forcing functions. These are things that drove the problem to occur, and there can be many of them. I know over the years I've seen 30 or 40 different steps that happened within the sequence of events, and 8 or 10 of them may have been forcing functions or had some contributing factor to the overall problem. So that's the second step. Once we know those forcing functions, now we can either address those forcing functions directly, or we can choose to do a fault tree, as I mentioned earlier, off of those forcing functions to understand why they occurred and more of the systemic and latent roots that are driving the situation. That's the first tool in that sequence of events. The second tool is really a simple expansion of the first. In fact, it really has a very unique usage case, and I'll give you two of those in a second. But the first one is that it branches, just like what we saw with the 5Y going to the fault tree. The sequence of events branches into what we call an event and causal factor. Now, the traditional event and causal factor is a little more complex than what I'm going to explain, but I found if we just use the branching mechanism that the ECF provides, it gives us the ability to understand problems when we can't put things in sequence. And let me explain what I mean by that. So if two individuals, let's say just as an example, one's on a forklift and one's in a metal hauler, all right, and they're driving around in the facility and they collide with each other at the edge of a corner. I can't necessarily put everything from the forklift in a sequence with the metal hauler because I don't have any way to relate them. I don't know when the metal hauler got in or the gentleman driving the metal hauler got in and put the key in the ignition as compared to when the gentleman driving the forklift put the key in the ignition. All right. I don't know any of those steps until they meet at that corner. And then from that corner forward, I can put them in a sequence in time all as one entity. And that is, in essence, what we call an ECF, event and causal factor analysis. Now, why does this matter? Or why is it important? Because if I break either one of those chains, so if I can identify a forcing function in the metal hauler, or I can identify a forcing function in the forklift and eliminate that forcing function, I can reduce the risk of reoccurrence moving forward. So having them in sequence is important because I want to be able to break that chain, but I can't mix them together because I don't know in time. It's not time stamped and I don't know where they fit. All right. So that's a little bit about, you know, the two tools, the first one being the sequence of events and the second one being the event and causal factor. Again, both great tools, really good at helping you understand what occurred and the sequence that it occurred. Many times you will incorporate a fault tree right off of the ECF, so you'll kind of blend the two tools together. That's why I call them transitional root calls. You can transition between them and use them as you see fit. The limitations, a couple. You may need an extra tool. You may need a fault tree or a logic tree in order to really understand the systemic and latent roots that are coming out of the ECF or the sequence of events. So in that situation, it's not enough tool for the job. I need to go a little deeper. Now, there are times when the forcing functions are pretty cut and dried and we can address them right where they are, and we feel like that reduces the chance of reoccurrence and we're good. But that is the interplay that's going on there. Really great tool for organizing and understanding what happened, especially what happened in the future and what happened in the past. So as you look at it, this tool is the only tool in our toolbox that allows us to see the events that occurred after the failure, as well as the events that occurred before. And that's important, because sometimes the way we react to the failure is indicative of what we probably did last time. So we can't say it's evidence of what happened, but it is an indication of what happened in the past or might have happened in the past. And now I can start researching those and trying to prove if they did or didn't happen within my root cause investigation.
All right, excellent. So from an advantage standpoint, it might help us identify that forcing function, which we need to dive deep into. It allows us to see what happened after the incident occurred. It allows us to look at two different timelines together. But as a drawback, like you mentioned, we may need to use a second tool, such as a fault tree or logic tree, to dive down to the systemic or latent levels once we identify that forcing function.
Absolutely.
All right, excellent. Now, what other tools have you seen used out in the field? What ones do you find effective? I've heard of all kinds of different ones, but which ones do you see commonly out there?
The ones we've talked about today are probably the ones I see most commonly within facilities. But another one that I can think of that I have seen multiple times is something called barrier analysis, where we're looking at all of the different systems that could have prevented something from occurring. So in that, the use of that tool, I might, for instance, say that we've had a fire, and in order for that fire to happen, there had to be an ignition source. There had to be no protection of the fuel. There had to be all of these different barriers that all had to be breached in order for the failure to occur. And folks will analyze those and begin to understand, can they address them with systems or processes or people changes? And so that's a tool that I see fairly regularly out in the market. And then most of the other tools, honestly, are a take on one of the tools we've talked about today, or one of the pre-analysis tools, like change analysis. There are a couple different flavors of change analysis on the market. And what change analysis is, just briefly, is the idea of, okay, what is different today with this thing than yesterday or last week or last month when it was working perfectly? You're looking at what changed, who changed, when did it change, how did it change? And in my line of thinking, I'm using that to come up with the questions that I'm going to start asking operators and maintainers and those that are involved in the situation. You will see that tool used, though, in a true root cause methodology. So it's possible, but I do reserve that mostly for questions.
All right. Excellent. Now, with all these different tools and methodologies out there, understanding some of the pros and cons of each, how do we pick which one to use? Is that experience? Is there a nice hard standard that says, if this, then use this?
We have both for it, but I think, as the name implies, when I say transitional root cause, I think we have to be comfortable with transitioning as the situation changes. You wouldn't believe how many times people start a root cause analysis with a problem statement and end up changing that problem statement as they understand more about the problem during the investigation. So if the problem statement changes, the tool may change. So we've got to be okay with flexibility to go back and forth between the tools. But to answer more, I guess, poignantly, if it is a single point failure, if it is the failure of a component and you want to understand it better, I think I'm going to go with the tree tools in most cases. If you come to me with a problem that is I perceive is going to have lots of contributing factors and lots of potential causes. If you bring me something like that, I'm probably going to go with the transparency tools and use the spreadsheet-based approach to go after all of those different contributing factors. If you come to me and there's a lot of unclarity around what actually happened or who was involved or what condition the equipment or the process was in at the time, then I am going to go with the time tools. And I will tell you, more often than not now, I actually start with the time tools to really get my head around the problem, and then I will branch out into transparency or one of the tree tools. So I hope that kind of helps. The transparency tools are for those big problems. The tree tools are for those specific failures that you're dealing with. And the time tools are to help us get an understanding of all the contributing factors and all the things that were going on. So I'm going to use those for those misunderstood or situations where there may be a lot of missing data.
All right. Excellent. Now, what would you tell people that are looking to step up their RCA game? Do they need to go buy a software package? Do they need to follow a methodology like AD? What do they need to do to step up their game?
That's a great question. So, honestly, I go into so many facilities that if they just did the basics of root cause analysis well, they would see a step change in performance. Through the students that you and I coach, going through our IBL process, we see them applying root cause, and we see the huge ROI, the huge return on investment that they're getting. So, I think the biggest thing about root cause is just don't be scared of it. Start small, do one or two RCAs a month, have a process that tells you what you should do it on and what you shouldn't do it on, and follow that process. If you have a process, you do one or two a month, you will see great results. There's no doubt about it.
All right. Excellent. The one other thing I may add from my standpoint is make sure you communicate those RCAs well. A3, for example, is a great way to communicate what we're solving, the business case, all those things. A 50-page document is never going to get read. While we may need some of that supporting data, make sure we got that nice one-page A3 for whoever is interested in this thing.
James, that is a great point. I got a little excited on that one. You're exactly right. It is absolutely critical that we market what we do from an R, cheapen the tool. But at the end of the day, if you're not telling others what you found and how you fixed it and the success that you've had, it will be very hard to get volunteers to come in and help you do more of these in the future.
Yes, absolutely. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today on root cause analysis? The one thing they can go do different tomorrow or next week?
Well, the first thing that popped in my head, honestly, was the Nike slogan, just do it. Just do some RCAs. If you want to sit down and start working through a fault tree, I know you or I, either one, would love to chat with people that are trying to do that and kind of help them through that process. But at the end of the day, just do some. As you go through, you will get better. They will take longer in the beginning. But that's the thing about RCAs. I don't believe in silver bullets. I don't think there's any one thing you can plug in that's just going to change your organization. But what I do know is as you start to put other things in play, RCAs really drive a lot of value to the bottom line. So again, just do it.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Now, where can people find out more about you, Iridicio, RCA, all those great things?
I think probably the best place to go is the Iridicio website, eruditio.com. But other than that, I think there's a lot of resources available within the Iridicio network. Of course, this podcast is a great way to learn more and hear more about the things that I'm passionate about. But we also have blogs available. In fact, I have recently revived my blog, which was on a hiatus for a while. That's the reliabilitynow.com blog, and I'm starting to post more and more content there on a weekly basis. If you're excited about root cause, that actually may be a good stop for you because there is a lot of posts, over 200 posts there, covering various things, but a big part of that is RCA. And then, you know, one other area that I know has quite a bit of material as well is the HPReliability.com blog and the Iridicio.com blog. So we've got quite a few different locations there that you can go and search through and hopefully find just small little bits of information that you can take back and share that's not overwhelming or too hard to digest or too hard to help other people understand within your organization.
All right. Excellent. Now, on the flip side, if you really want to deep dive into some of these, I know NASA has a great book which is available for download on the internet about fault trees, but it's also hundreds of pages long, tons of information in there. But like you said, it's not short. It's not condensed. You really got to go through the whole thing to get the gist of it that way.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I do love the book you're talking about, but I think at the end of the day, if the listeners will simplify their root cause efforts, they will see more results. And my point there is I've watched a lot of folks over the years go by software and go by places to sort their RCAs and figure out ways to put them on SharePoint and how they're going to structure it and all these kind of things. But then I go back and see those same companies two or three years later, and what they have is four or five RCAs scattered across that software or that platform or that SharePoint site. They're just not executing on the real value, which is problem solving and solution implementation.
All right. Excellent. Great words of wisdom there. You know, focus more on the basics, get those basics right, get the basics right. Like you said, just do it. Do one or two RCAs a month. Start with those bigger problems, work your way through some of the tools, get familiar with them, and just do it. You'll get better with that experience. No one's a great RCA facilitator their first time around. It requires practice and effort.
Absolutely. Yeah. Facilitation is another topic. We could probably spend a whole hour on from that perspective, because I tell you, over the years, I've made so many mistakes from a facilitation standpoint that unfortunately either slows or stalls the information you're trying to gain from the RCA. So practice, and you will see that you get better over time.
All right. Excellent. Well, with that, Sean, I want to say thank you for taking the time to talk to us about the pros and cons of some of the more common RCA methods. It's greatly appreciated. So thank you.
Well, thank you, James. It's always fun to be on here and always fun to talk about the stuff that maybe isn't featured so much and really explain to folks why it's important and what the value is.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.